Good morning. I think we will get underway, if we may. My name is Rick West, and I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Autry National Center of the American West and the moderator for today's summit. I want to thank all of you for being here for what I think is a very worthwhile and important meeting at a very important conference. If I may, I would like to just open it up with some comments that Susan asked me to make, attempting or suggesting, not dictating, but just suggesting a frame of reference for our discussions, which will occur throughout the day. When Susan Feller contacted me about being here today and offering opening remarks that suggest a frame for the Museum Summit and the development of protocols for indigenous objects, the declaration of a dear friend and colleague of mine, Elaine Hormangurian, came immediately to mind. She actually made the comment almost a generation ago in the early days of the museum community's great angst and anxiety following the United States Congress's enactment of the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act of 1990. At that time, many museums in this country that held substantial Native collections of cultural patrimony felt that if they listened carefully, they literally could hear the threatening rumble of 18-wheelers nuzzling up to their back bay doors to cart the objects away. But in the face of all of that, Elaine, then my deputy director for public programming of the National Museum of the American Indian, and already a highly respected and distinguished figure in the international museum community, said the following as both reality and comfort. The American Indian claim, she said, in their persistence and in their creation and reliance on the creation and prosecution of law, have been the most visible catalyst for the current industry-wide reappraisal of museums as social institutions. For this pressure, all of us, even in our most fearful and anxious states, should be grateful. We will, I believe, learn more about museum possibilities for the next decade, thanks to the American Indian community, than we have learned in the previous several. And museums will become different in a way that will, in the future, seem logical and self-evident. I predict that we will not be able to recreate what all the fuss was about. With Elaine's eloquence as pivot point, here is what I would like to offer by way of introduction to our museum summit. First, I want to focus on this change-making, even transformational development of the past generation that so deeply affected museums in Indian country directly, and that has everything to do with the very subject that we address today. Second, on that platform, I would like to describe more specifically the ripple effect, the broader philosophical and in broader philosophical and practical terms, on museums, their collections, and the development of appropriate protocols surrounding them. First, to the literal requirements of those transformational moments, the elephants in the room that have had such impact on museums, namely the federal legislation passed in 1989 and 1990 in the form, respectively, of the National Museum of the American Indian Act of 1989 and NAGPRA in 1990. Both have borne an immense and enduring legacy for all museums with collections of Native cultural patrimony, including the NMAI and institutions like the Autry, which now holds the legendary collections of the former Southwest Museum of the American Indian in Los Angeles. The 1989 Act applied only to the Smithsonian Institution and its Native collections of human remains, while the 1990 Act covered virtually all American museums and their collections of Native human remains, sacred objects, and cultural patrimony. The critical provisions of the legislation most members of this audience and panel know well. The categories of material affected are those I have just described. Both acts mandate the return of objects upon request to culturally affiliated contemporary Native communities if the materials, apart from human remains and funerary objects, are essential to the conduct of contemporary ceremonial life and practice. In moral and practical terms, the tangibles of the repatriation legislation are seminal and substantial. They are legal requirements that define and drive repatriation in museums with respect to native objects. The return of human remains and funerary materials was nothing less than the confirmation of a moral imperative that corrected vast wrongs committed during the 19th century when the U.S. military's battlefield sweeps sent the remains of thousands of Native ancestors to Washington, D.C. for cranial studies. In addition, subject to certain legal processes and evidentiary proof, the laws required the return of sacred objects and cultural patrimony that had everything to do, as a practical matter, with securing the cultural future of contemporary Native communities throughout the United States. The congressional determination, explicit in the legislative history, was that these kinds of cultural materials should never have been in a museum in the first instance. Instead, they should be returned to communities in order to sustain, and in some cases to revive, sacred and ceremonial practices. But perhaps in the end of equal importance, the acts also contained intangibles beyond their tangible substantive provisions that possess true cultural potency for the future relationships between museums and Native America. They may not have been perfectly understood at the time by most parties, including Native Americans and communities. But the implicit message was this: the National Museum of the American Indian Act and NAGPRA forever changed the fundamental power relationship between museums and contemporary Native communities. My point is not limited to the return of Native material and objects, as important as that provision is. I always consider that requirement only the tip of the iceberg that actually sometimes conceal below the waterline an even larger revolution in philosophy and practice for the museum community. Specifically, the definitions in the museum world of terms like authority, authenticity, and expertise. Questions such as who has knowledge and cultural authority? How do museums define interpretive expertise? And who are the experts entitled to sit at the table of museum interpretation were profoundly altered. No one captured more eloquently and accurately this seminal power shift in the classical museum paradigm, its philosophical underpinnings, and the resulting museum best practices than a person who most certainly should have known, namely my first boss at the Smithsonian Institution, Secretary Robert McCormick Adams. Here is how he described the NMAI at the very time it was being created, and shortly after I had arrived as its founding director. "This is a national museum," he said, "that takes the permanence, the authenticity, the vitality, and the self-determination of Native American voices as the fundamental reality it must represent. We move decisively from the older image of the museum as a temple with its superior self-governing priesthood to a forum committed not to the promulgation of received wisdom, but to the encouragement of a multicultural dialogue." I would now like to turn, as promised, to the second point of my presentation. Specifically, given this potent legacy of the spirit of the repatriation laws on museums, what effect did the legislation have on museum best practices and operating protocols? Based upon my own experience, and without assuming, as Secretary Adams cautioned, that anyone here should treat what passes my lips as received wisdom, let me describe how I see the far-reaching legacy of repatriation. First, and most obviously, the legislation motivated and ultimately required museums to return tens of thousands of objects to Native communities that encompassed all the categories of objects and materials specified in the NMAI Act and NAGPRA. I already have referred to the museum community's fears of the awaiting 18-wheelers that were going to demolish their collections. But these fears, based upon a full quarter century of experience, turned out to be completely unjustified. The NMAI, during my tenure as director, repatriated thousands of objects to federal and state recognized Native communities here in the United States, and in addition to First Nations in Canada and indigenous communities in Latin America, which we were not legally required to do. I was asked routinely in the early years how the NMAI was able to survive as a museum when our collections either were being, or were at risk thereof, of being gutted by repatriation. But I kept the numbers, and my response went something like this. Well, we've repatriated at this point approximately 20,000 objects, and that reduction leaves us with about 980,000 objects still in the collection for developing exhibits and public programming. I think it is sufficient to serve the public satisfactorily. At the Autry, the results were no different. The inquiring minds who needed to know finally quit asking the question. It became more than a little gratuitous. My second point is the following, and it sat at the center of Secretary Adams' earlier quotation and is an implied message that comes from the repatriation legislation. Native peoples and communities possess legitimate and undeniable authority concerning the meaning and interpretation of their objects and cultural patrimony. By stated mission, board policy, and programmatic design, the intentions of the NMAI were explicit from the beginning. There we have chosen not only to respect and honor the first-person Native voice, but we also want to take a critical collateral step, given our mission and the strength, depth, and breadth of our encyclopedic collections. We must ensure with consistency and substance through our core exhibitions like Art of the West and the temporary shows like Floral Journey, Native North American Beadwork, and Empire and Liberty, the Civil War in the West, the place and significance of Native cultures and history is a present and integral thread in the interpretive fabric of the American history and experience. Fundamental paradigm shifts like these concerning voice, inclusion, and integration in museum narratives often will not be taken lightly, let alone embraced, particularly among critics, and do not believe for a moment that they are still not out there, whose museological paradigm emanates from more conventional origins. When the NMAI opened on the National Mall in 2004, I think we heard from every single one of them in triplicate. This community of museum critics often see culturally inclusive museums as permitting and even encouraging the entrance of hordes of the intellectually unwashed into the very halls of the museum as temple, and that previously exclusive and sacred preserve that Bob Adams defined for us earlier. But at the risk of rhetorical indelicacy, let me be blunt about the matter. For sound reasons, those critics already have lost this pitched cultural and political battle, and they know it, however much they continue to protest, pretend, persist, and resist. And museums, including those where I have been privileged to spend time, have become changed and far better places as a direct result through the explicit inclusion of the additional authoritative voices of Native peoples themselves. Third and finally, museums with significant and substantial Native collections from an organizational standpoint began to work based upon different operating assumptions and protocols and reorganize themselves accordingly. The NMAI and the Autry provide worthwhile and instructive examples, ones that I know. Both museums, based upon their missions and the commands and provisions of the federal repatriation legislation, believe, but far be it from me to ever put words in the mouth of my best buddy, Kevin, that they have a special responsibility to contemporary Native communities. And parenthetically, let me say that Joe Horsecapture's late father, George Horsecapture, my closest and most revered counselor during my tenure at the NMAI, pounded this principle into my head without ceasing 24/7. That special responsibility is to bring these institutions and their Native collections beyond the literal requirements of the repatriation laws to Indian country, rather than expecting Native communities always to come to Washington, D.C., or to Los Angeles. That outreach and connection can take any number of forms in institutional protocols and practices. During my tenure at the NMAI, The Department of Community and Constituent Services not only oversaw repatriation, but in addition administered an internship program intended to strengthen Native community cultural institutions and facilitated the loan of objects from NMAI collections to tribal museums. This brand of bilateralism also demanded internal protocols that have important ripple effects in Indian country because of how Native collections that do remain in the museum are treated. The examples are manifold at the Autry and also are reflected and replicated in numerous other museums at the present time. They include, among others, exhibitions guidelines that mandate meaningful involvement of authoritative Native voices, research policies that require Native community permissions for third-party research with respect to culturally sensitive objects, and the similar treatment of Native materials used for purposes of publication. But in the end, and ultimately in our conversations for the rest of the day here, what does all of the foregoing mean and portend for cultural protocols and practices in museums regarding Native collections? I would hope that its significance is the following. For so long, indeed the better part of a century and a half, museums could rightly be categorized as obstacles to or opponents of the legitimate connections, interrelationships, and authorities of living Native communities and peoples with a vast abundance of Native collections that sat in these otherwise wonderful institutions called museums. As a museum director, I pray instead for our continued progress, inspired by the legal dictates and spirit of repatriation, toward the time that museums achieve for Native America the status of collaborators, supporters, and partners. That, my friends, is the day museums at long last will come to the true and mutual understanding of and reconciliation with the authenticity and authority of the powerful and originating Native thread of this great cultural tapestry we call America. Thank you very much.